this is not a twisty top.
Oh, yeah. There's a tool over there, right?
No, I've got...
Oh, you got
you're telling
own.
Me. Oh, you're pointing the other direction.
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are disassembling electronics before every show and reassembling them in time to record one. My name is Brock Dittus.
I like that pause there. My name is Aaron Flores. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of how electronics work and... also with a perspective on how they connect us to people across the world, such as yourself listening to this podcast right now.
I have no way to connect this at all to anything of what we're supposed to be saying.
That's okay.
Covering our mixer back because we took the cover off.
For it was naked and it hid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, we should talk about who took apart our mixer and fixed it for us.
That's right. We're in here with design genius and fearless disassembler, Jeff Everett.
Fearless.
I mean, is that true? Are you actually fearless when it comes to disassembly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll take it apart in a heartbeat. I can't guarantee that I'll put it back together.
I am impressed by your level of fearlessness. Yeah, we were just saying that if it was up to me, like if there was a guest here that was just kind of sitting around watching us do it, I would not disassemble the mixing board. And yeah,
after I took it apart and couldn't put it back together or fix it, it would be like, sorry, I broke your shit.
Guess there's no podcast tonight.
Good night, guys.
Peace out. Drop the mic.
Just knock over our mic stands on the way out.
Exactly.
Everett out. Crash.
Yeah. So that's what we were up to right before the show. But Jeff, you are also the leader of the FBC, and this is something that we'll cover in great detail in just a couple of minutes. You're also part of Team Sincerity.
Word.
And
you are the glue that keeps the team together.
I'm the anchor that holds it down.
Our faithful anchor.
It's way up a hill.
Well, it's good to have grounding.
That's right.
So, yeah, anyways.
You're the John Entwistle of Team Sincerity.
And everybody needs one of those.
That's right.
I was going to ask, who actually purchased, because we're drinking some beers. Apparently you two were here before me, and you both went to Beer Mongers, and then I went to Beer Mongers. So we're well stocked.
So they're well supported by us.
Yes. We do love them. Ka-ching. Take a drink, Krista. So anyways, that happened. But yes, who bought the beers?
Like, as in actually purchased them or
yes,
picked
who,
them out?
Yes. Who took legal tender and gave it to the person which formerly owned the beers?
I took plastic tender and okay. Yes.
I guess it's a form of legal tender. Thank yes. you. Thank you yes. for that. This is Samuel Smith's Imperial Stout.
But I did not pick these out.
Yeah,
that would be our guest here, Mr. Everett.
Yeah, I picked these out.
Jeff, thank you for the selection that you made. This is really good because it's the old, what is it, the old brewery, Tadcaster, established 1758. This is a very intricate and awesome label. And it's a very good, thick, and strong Imperial Stout. And the sole agents are Merchant Duvin Corp in Tukwila, which is just north of where I grew up. So I feel like I'm specially connected to this beer. speaking of Team Sincerity, can I tell everybody about Cranksgiving?
I think you should, because I know nothing about what went down over there.
Yeah. Well, first of all.
I'm really intrigued. And neither of us.
Yeah, regretfully, I was unable to attend this year.
Yeah, and you two are kind of like your cornerstones of Team Sincerity. So we had some good sub. Well, we had a good sub, I guess, that stepped in for you. Brandon Shelby, who he's actually going to come in. We scheduled a show in January, so he's going to tell us, about his summer adventures with Daniel Harkins.
Think of a better substitution for me.
Right, right. Well, and if there is anyone who does the bicycling of two men, it is Brandon Shelby.
Yes.
So,
yes. Truth.
Multiple times that he, not because he was trying to leave us behind, just because he has like a speed that he goes at. He was far ahead of us.
Nice.
Yeah, we actually had a team. While we were out on the roads, and maybe I should explain Cranksgiving for anybody who has not done it. We had an interview from Laura, who's one of the people that helps run it.
Tom McTighe.
Last year, and then Tom was just on, in September, like a month ago.
It seems so long
ago. He was episode 201. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he rode with us.
Yes.
On the grill ride.
He did, yeah. So he's another one of the people behind it. And then Megan Sennett, who we also just had in, was kind of the announcer and voice of the event. So those three were kind of at the helm of it. But again, happened at VeloCult, and it was a charity ride. So that we went all around town picking up food donations that we bought and delivered to help folks at Outside In who are collating donations to make sure people have enough to eat and they have underwear. That was actually one of the things that underwear and socks are far more expensive than you would think they are these days.
Underwear is crazy expensive these days.
And granted, it's like a 3 or 4 pack or something, but $40 for a pair of underwear.
I just realized, like,
what?
I sound very old.
A pack.
I sound very old when I say, like, underwear is so expensive.
Right, right.
I remember back in my day.
Roughly 5 equal to nickel. So, yeah.
Made out of bark.
Yes, we called them knee breeches. But, no, it was great. We did this thing. It's a traditional alley cat sort of thing where we got a manifest at the beginning, and we had all these different places. We had to go
and
to...
And you can plan your own route?
Plan our own route, yeah. Although it seems like most people, like this year and last year when we did these things, it seems like most people do those in roughly the same order.
Okay.
So we were always kind of like bumping into the same folks that we always saw, you know, like...
Okay.
Like, we get there first, and then somebody else shows up, and then we leave, and someone else is just rolling in. It was kind of like, you know, the order changed from time to time, but it was a good event. It was great. We took about 2 hours, I think, to go out and hit about 6 stores. So
okay.
I feel like we were busting our asses. So there was the time. We had to you were looking at the leaderboard, and we were like 5th that came in or something like that?
5th or 6th?
Yeah. So we made pretty good time. Again, I
especially
attribute that
given,
to,
like, it looked like there was a lot of teams.
Yeah, there were. There were like 20. And I don't know that there's any definitive word if we beat Seattle, because I know that was...
Oh, fuck Seattle.
In the nicest way possible. We have a longstanding rivalry in the many years that Portland has had a Cranksgiving. Read last year and this year. As far as which city brings out the most participants and contributes the most to their charity. So I do not know if there was... I don't know who won the banana award. Oh, yeah. And then there was a costume contest. So we were told to, you know, dress up in costumes, come in with some sort of a theme. And I had that leftover tiger suit from Halloween. So what we decided, Adele and I both have, you know, matching tiger suits. So we decided to be Calvin and Hobbes time traveling, because that's like
there's a strip where they meet each other.
Yes. Where Calvin and Hobbes get into the cardboard time machine. And they go to 8:30 in the afternoon or the evening to pick up the homework that you know, the other Calvin and Hobbes had completed, so they could go back to 5:30 and do nothing. So we kind of acted that out. So Adele and I were the Hobbeses, and
wait, you actually acted out that strip?
No, not really.
Oh,
I was hoping
that would have been so great.
I was hoping to get a cardboard box and do like a kind of a photorealistic
some
representation. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. But that was not to be. Maybe maybe we'll do it again next year or something. But anyways, it was a lot of fun.
That tiger suit is not going anywhere.
No, sir. No, it is durable.
You got to get your money's worth.
Yeah. Well,
suit.
Let me tell you, just while we're talking about the tiger suit, let me add that I put in some extra fabric, because when I first crafted the tiger suit, it was not done to any sort of pattern. We basically traced my body and then sewed the pieces together. And so I ended up with, let's say, the peak of the inseam. You know, right where the legs come together, very tight. So I ended up having the seams were ripping out, and I had a space of about an inch or so that was at the end of the Halloween party kind of exposed to the air.
Impressive.
Thank you. I'd like to think so. But for Cranksgiving, I knew that that would not stand for, you know, like 2 hours of intense bicycling. So I ended up adding about 2 inches of fabric.
Of
the
tiger print fabric?
Yes, to the crotchal region.
Great.
Yeah. And in about, I think I was going for about the same stripe pattern. We'll
see. Right on. Well, I don't feel embarrassed now. I just actually, like, patched up the crotch of my pants this morning.
There we go.
I can't tell you how many times I bust out the crotch in all my pants.
It's just daily. It's a thing.
It's daily.
Do you have any mitigation strategies?
I should switch to dresses.
Okay.
There
we go. A utility coat would be useful. All right. So anyways, that happened. It was great, and it was all for a good cause. It's good to see that many people come out and do something really exciting. So that was a good time. There are pictures online, and I guess I'll put them on our podcast website in
right
case
on.
No one has Facebook or Twitter. What did you do anything notable this last week?
This last week.
Or did anything strike you?
I didn't, well, the reason why I couldn't be at Cranksgiving was because I was working.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, that's kind of notable. Not really.
Yeah, taking care of business.
Taking care of people.
Yes.
You know.
Like Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Every day.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
every way.
Yes.
And
that's a song about public transit, by the way.
Are you shitting
me? Take the 915 into the city.
Okay. Yeah.
Or whatever. I forget the lyrics. Yeah, but that's not important.
Above and try to look pretty.
And misogyny. And,
yeah.
Yeah, it's all wrapped up in a nice package. So.
Well, you know, transit and misogyny are, you know,
they're
pretty close bedfellows.
Sometimes.
Unfortunately. Well, I went to see Cold Specs last night.
Oh, right. It's a band. It features a baritone sax.
Yeah, and a bass clarinet.
Oh, really?
Which was surprising. Yeah.
You can't get enough of that.
No, you don't see that very often.
Yeah.
It's very hard to mic woodwinds in general, but a clarinet or a bass clarinet is very difficult to mic, and they were having a lot of feedback trouble.
Yeah.
Because anytime the guy like walked away, the mics were pointed directly at like one of the guitar amps.
Okay.
So, yeah, it would just feedback like crazy.
Hell for a sound man.
Yeah, yeah. But great show. Lead singer has such an amazing voice, and found out that I can dance a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not going to make a habit out of this.
But, okay. Okay.
I cut a bit of a rug.
Is this something that you told yourself or someone else told this to you? Because I believe in my head that I'm a really good singer.
I had a dancing partner who said I did really well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she was just being nice. I don't know. Oh. But anyway.
I think this must be proven on some sort of bicycle ride. Like next Pedalpalooza, when there's all those dance party rides going around.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think we're going to have to put this
to
the test.
Out, yeah. Grab some cardboard.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
regardless, I was a little disappointed that Philip Ross's doppelganger did not ask me where the bathroom was.
All right. Well,
as per every other concert I've been to.
Lightning rarely strikes twice in the same place.
This is true. Well, it's a different place, though.
Yeah.
This was at the Doug Fir this time.
Okay. So lightning could have possibly struck.
Yeah.
But so it goes. Yeah. Hey, how's that rain cape?
How's
your experience been?
So there's positives and negatives, but I would say, well, maybe I shouldn't say positives and negatives, but at this point, I would say I'm not entirely convinced to go to Rain Cape.
Mm-hmm.
I see the advantages of it in that, like, it's really warm.
Right.
I will say it's really warm.
Yeah.
I love being under that because I don't have to worry about, like, dressing in a bunch of layers.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also a disadvantage in that. Anytime I stand still or if there's a strong wind, I'm freezing.
Sure.
Yeah. So that was tough. But I always felt, awkward, like riding, like I couldn't be as agile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe the word I'm looking for.
That was my experience is that when you want to either signal for a turn or you need to like reach around and scratch your back or whatever, like the cape is just big enough to go from your back to your handlebars.
Well, I didn't realize how much I relied on looking either at my hands or at my gearing or.
Mm. Oh, right. You can't see
even
those.
Even just where my front wheel is in relation to the road or to the turn.
Okay. So for you, the cape blocks out some of those cues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. I love the idea. I think you and I were talking about it like a couple weeks ago, and we determined that if you were riding in a straight line for less than half an hour, it's a great solution to rain. If you make lots of turns and you go up a fair number of hills and your commute is like over half an hour, I feel like it's less of a practical solution, which for me is the case.
And if you are, I think it was a difference between upright and aggressive stance in riding. If you're an upright rider, You know, if you take a more relaxed approach, which everyone should just relax in general anyways.
All right.
But I think the rain cape is great. Unfortunately, I like to lean very far forward.
Okay.
I, you know, do take a more aggressive stance on riding. And
so you need a tighter rain cape.
Yeah. Yeah, something
one with
to
less
that
slack.
Effect.
It's called a jacket.
There we go. Yeah.
So, but yeah, so that it didn't quite work as well
right,
for me.
Right.
But,
so let's put the thank you out to Drew for definitely for
totally,
lending us
yes.
The gear. It was really
and
cool to get the chance.
It'll be forthcoming.
Definitely, yeah, and we'll get that back to you, Drew.
And it doesn't smell anymore, Drew.
Right,
I
right.
Sure
that was my fault. Aaron fixed it, as is the case with many things on this show. I would say that, yeah, I think for my own personal preference, I still prefer the rain jacket and rain chaps. I think that's kind of my preferred rain gear action. And a good pair of rubber boots never hurts. So that's, yeah. But it was really nice to have the enlightenment. And I think the cape could be a great option for a lot of people, especially if you don't want to, like, buy a bunch of rain gear. If you don't have rain gear, I feel like the cape would probably be cheaper than the raincoat and chaps arrangement.
Yeah, probably.
Depending on which
one
you get.
It's one item versus several items
yeah.
that are comparable in cost to
right.
each other. I want to appreciate just the whole throwing down the gauntlet, and I kind of want to open the door to anybody who cares to, like, do that.
Do you own something nice that goes with a bicycle?
That want us,
let us
do you want
it.
Us to ruin shit for you?
Exactly.
Well, not so much that as, like, you know, just... I think it was cool in a way to engage with somebody on that level. It was
yeah,
really fun.
For
and,
sure.
Yeah,
I
so
would,
thanks, Drew.
I would definitely product test the shit out of anything.
Yeah, yeah. Attention advertisers.
Yeah.
This man could soon be your guy.
I'm a fan of Ford F-150s as well.
That's right. Just to throw it at me. So tell us, Jeff, you come from originally a different place than here. We're going to talk a lot about your time in Spokane, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually Spokane, mm-hmm. right?
Mm.
That's right.
I like how you pronounce that.
Yes.
Right.
But you came from a place...
people cringing all over the place right now.
You came from a place where people call it Spokane. So
that's true.
A lot of time in St. Louis, is that right?
Yeah, originally from Mississippi.
Ah, yes.
We moved to St. Louis. You mentioned Cranksgiving. In St. Louis, it was like the biggest imaginable ride.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like the marquee
it's just
event.
Crazy. Yeah, there's thousands of people that that participate. Their biggest ride is like the Moonlight Ramble. That's a once a year ride where like 10,000 people show up for this thing where you ride,
wow.
you know, I don't know, maybe it's 30, 40 miles, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a sponsored event or just a regular get together and ride?
I think it started as one and ended up the other.
Ah, okay.
So it's kind of a big deal now.
Yeah.
But Cranksgiving is crazy in St. Louis. But
yeah.
We were there for a little while and then moved to Spokane. We were there for a few years and then came here.
There we go. So when did you adopt the bicycle as more than just a child's toy? Because I'm sure you grew up with one, like you had one.
Yeah, I grew up riding BMX.
Okay.
Spent a lot of time on just as, you know, that's how a kid gets around.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and road ramps quite a bit. And eventually... moved up to a mountain bike because it was like this, I don't know, you kind of felt like you wanted to be a big kid, so you got a bigger bike.
Yeah, for sure.
Mountain bikes got big, and so I got that, and it sucked really bad.
Cause harder to get rad on a mountain bike.
It was from Walmart, too, so it was a rattle trap to begin with. And this one kid that I knew in school wanted to sell this Nishiki 10-speed.
There you go.
I'm like, all right, I'll do this. So I just traded him straight up for the mountain bike.
Straight across.
Sucker.
Yeah.
He got taken for all he was worth.
Man. Yeah. And I rode that bike for the longest time and then it kind of went from there. That was my transportation.
Okay.
And that's where I kind of got the bug for it being transportation.
Gotcha. So that was before St. Louis.
Most definitely. That was back in Mississippi when I was still a kid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that's cool to have such an early induction to the club. Because
yeah.
for a lot of people, like the idea that it's transportation is still a revolutionary idea.
Yeah, I was still the weird kid on a bicycle, using it as transportation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody else would just ride out to the sand pit and go do kid stuff on theirs, and like I was going to the store,
right?
You know, and using it,
getting to work, that sort of thing.
Yeah, to get to work.
Yeah,
so,
nice.
So I grew up the weird guy.
I was going to say, was that like weird like in high school where everybody sort of transitions into the car and it becomes more of a car culture?
Exactly, yeah. Junior high was a little bit difficult because it was close to the house at the time. And I was able to ride my bike to school, and I was the only one on the bike rack.
So it made sense like logistically, but not popular.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
And that's the time at which you're like
a lot of things about my childhood were logistically made sense, but not
make
popular.
Okay, there
did we not go. Make me popular.
And this is just this is the shining example.
Just an extension of that.
There we go. So you took the bicycling lifestyle with you to St. Louis, and is that where you connected with more people like yourself? Like you finally came out of the shadows and realized that other people also ride bicycles for fun or for getting around or whatever.
There was the infrastructure for it. You know, there were bike lanes. There was a map. There was a crew of people that maintained the street specifically for bikes, and it was really bizarre for me to imagine that. And I was able to kind of fall in with the right people and just was able to get around by bike. And parking was such a bitch too. Like,
right.
Why would you drive?
Yeah.
You know?
I
found a good parking place behind my apartment. I'm not moving this car.
There we go.
I'm going to ride my bike.
Were you living in a downtown area?
Yeah, we were pretty close to downtown, little 3-floor walk up with like absolutely no parking.
Yeah. And so if you lose that parking space, like you say, it's difficult to find again.
It's gone for days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to drive around the city for another place.
Yeah. And then you have to park somewhere on the street.
You know, and then you have to ride your bike home.
So ride your bike. Yeah. And it was a good transit system. Like the bus system was really great, and they have the metro, you know, train. So it would go wherever I needed to go. I mean, it went to the airport and Busch Stadium, and really that's the only two places I ever wanted to go.
Where else need you go?
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, I think St. Louis also got our historic rail car, streetcars. Like the ones that they used to run around the holidays and whatnot here in Portland. I think they sent them to St. Louis, and I think we covered that on the show, but I forget for sure.
No kidding.
Yeah. But yeah, a good place, as I understand.
Yeah,
also
it was a lot of fun.
Either the beginning or the terminus of the Lewis and Clark bicycling route from Adventure Cycling Association, which I've had my eye on for years and never done.
Yeah. We've ridden parts of that.
Yeah.
There's the, what is it, like the Mississippi River Trail that parallels the river all the way up to Canada.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. You know, you can take a ride off of that and go through East St. Louis, cross the river, and end up somewhere east. You can just keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of exciting. Like, there's so much possibility there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It really is the gateway city.
Right, right. Hence the arch, right?
Word.
Yeah. What is it like living near that arch? I'm just curious, because it's so iconic, and I've seen it like on, you know, like commemorative stamps or whatever. And I remember thinking, like, so there's just this arch going over the city that is, it seems like almost like a Halo kind of thing. Like, you know, if you play the video game at some point in that game, you're going to get to see this thing arcing across the sky.
Right. Yeah.
Is it like that?
A little bit. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The closer you get to it, the more opposing it seems to be. It's just this huge, ominous thing in the sky all the time. And you get used to it, but you also use it as like navigation.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Like I'm near the arch.
That makes sense.
You know, when you're new to the area, or, you know, when I was new to the area, I would use it as navigation.
Makes sense.
It never goes anywhere.
That's true. It probably won't. Is it big enough for people to climb inside of?
Yeah. Okay. There's an elevator, quote unquote elevator, that goes up through this thing. And it's like three or four train cars that look like these little tiny pods, and 4 to 6 people get inside of it, and it's built for probably 2 people. So
okay.
It's super crowded.
Nice.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound safe.
It's safe and uncomfortable.
It's the worst
combination. Totally not worth it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you can get into these little cars. And I think it was specifically for like, you know, crew to get to the top and stuff like that. But they built a little observation deck at the top, and it's like, what, 680 feet off the ground or something like that. And
it's way up there.
Yeah, you take these little, you know, space pods up through one of the legs, and I think it goes up both sides.
Nice.
And you go up to the top, and you look around, and like, yep, this is a thing.
There
it
is.
And then you get back in the little pods, and you go down. There's also a stairwell that climbs the entire thing.
Now, this is something.
I so totally wanted to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they won't let civilians in there.
Oh, they don't.
No. What? No. Like only military can use the stairs?
That's it. Okay. I think, code red to the top of the arch.
I think, you know, security or EMTs and
things like that.
Oh,
right, right. Those people.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Non-civilian.
Right, right. So tell us maybe just briefly about, like, you mentioned that there's a couple different rides, but a number of people doing bike fun in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
And that was probably, I'm imagining that's where you got the idea when you went to Spokane, like, something like this has to exist wherever I go next.
Absolutely. There was a small crew doing the FBC in St. Louis.
And FBC stands for what?
The fucking bike club.
Thank you.
It sort of named itself, I believe.
Right.
there wasn't like a meeting for this? Or
probably at some point. It's like, you know, we really need a name for this fucking bike club.
I think we just found
one. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, let's go with that.
Well done, Sam. Well done, Ralph. Let's clock out.
Yeah. We're done. But yeah, there was a small group of people doing this already, and it was just so much fun, and there was no pressure to it. There was no waivers to sign. You were just kind of on your own.
Mm-hmm. Taking responsibility for your own actions.
For real.
Yeah.
And then you would start at a bar, and you would end at a bar. And in St. Louis, you have the luxury of being in the Midwest, so it's incredibly flat.
Oh, sure.
And you could just ride for hours.
Right.
And
nary a hill to be seen.
Yeah. And the bars were open till like 3 or 4.
Oh, yeah. So is there an official closing
really
time?
Late.
Yeah. Depends on where you are.
If you're if the bar is a friend of the FBC,
okay,
they'll stay open for you.
Yeah. Who you are and who's watching.
Yeah. Unofficially, yeah. And you never heard that.
Of course not.
Oh, no.
Right. It's not like, no, it's just us.
Don't
here.
Tell anybody.
Just us.
But yeah, you know, you get the opportunity to start much later and ride much longer, and the crowds are bigger, and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have, you mentioned Cranksgiving, and what other kinds of rides were there? We have...
There was an innumerable alley cats that would go on.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
They were all over the place all the time. But you kind of had to know somebody at the bike shop, or know some people who knew some people, so they would give you a call, because the, you know, posting it on the internet wasn't really,
because it's like telling the cops, come shut us down.
Right. Gotcha. It really wasn't the way to go at the time.
Okay. And maybe this is a good time to say that the Sprocket Podcast does not endorse the breaking of any laws. You know, know your local regulations and follow them.
Well, I mean, alley cats are kind of controversial at times, because there are some alley cats that are kind of win at all costs, and traffic laws do sort of fall by the wayside in order for that to happen.
It's been known to happen, especially, well, and just like Cranksgiving here in Portland just the other day, everyone leaving VeloCult, like, I think everyone had the best intentions to follow traffic rules across town as they were doing their thing, but as everyone's pouring out of VeloCult, like, there's no way everyone was stopping at that four-way stop.
Yeah. Well, then you got all that adrenaline going, and, you know, everybody's just so excited.
Right, right. That's true. Which makes the following of laws, as we recommend, very difficult.
It does.
Yeah.
But even more important.
Yes.
Anyways, the FBC, St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alley cats.
Yeah, there were plenty of alley cats. And you just kind of had to get in with the right guys. And there were even... Beer Thursday, you would have at an outdoor velodrome, which was just a little bit north of where we lived.
Nice.
It was a super shitty velodrome.
Okay. When you say shitty velodrome, are we talking about like boards coming up, or is it not made of wood?
It is not made of wood.
Okay.
It is really terrible, wavy asphalt.
Okay.
And
where?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you're just riding kind of in circles.
It was this ancient velodrome that somebody ruined with asphalt. And then you just do, you know.
Someone said, you know what? Fuck this wood shit.
Yeah.
Let's just, cement lasts forever, you know?
Yeah, we have all this property. You know what we should do with it? Let's cover it in asphalt.
Okay.
Right.
But it got used on every Thursday night. We would have velodrome races with beer hand-ups and donut hand-ups and stuff
nice.
Like that. And
nice.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. There was one opportunity where we went in... I think mid to late fall, and on the back straightaway, there's probably a 6-foot fence, and along this fence grew these enormous sticker bushes. And I call them sticker bushes because I think that was their only reason to exist, was to grow.
They hand produce, out stickers to people?
Like, produce pointy objects to die and fall off into the track.
Yes, yes.
So 4 or 5 of us went. We just rode up there. We were going to do the velodrome and turn around and go home. Well, we decided to do that, and we got there, made a few laps.
Is this open to the public? Is it just like someplace
that anyone
can get into?
Yeah, it's okay. Just open. So we went and did a few laps. We repaired 5 tires. in 40-degree weather.
Yikes.
And we turned around and went home.
There you go. So that's inspiration. I'm sure better things came after that.
Absolutely.
So you've had this experience in St. Louis, and then you moved to Spokane. And was it work reasons? Was it opportunity? What took you to Spokane?
We were following an opportunity for my wife.
Okay.
She had finished her school for physical therapy, so we had decided we were going to move west.
Yeah.
Just give it a shot. So we did some research and decided we wanted to settle in Spokane for a little while, and it really hit the spot. It was a really great place to live for a little while.
Yeah. I would imagine there are some similarities to maybe not climate-wise necessarily. It's less humid than St. Louis.
Certainly culture-wise.
Smaller population. Were there similarities that you noticed that made you choose it as a place? Like,
yeah, there were definitely similarities. There was it had sort of a beginning bike culture.
Okay.
You know, 6-8 years ago, it didn't have what it has now.
Yeah.
And that it sort of drew me to it at that point, you know. Knowing that I wanted to start an FBC when I moved there,
mm-hmm.
like, well, let's really start this thing.
Yeah.
Let's start from pretty much nothing. So as the FBC grew, the infrastructure for cycling in Spokane grew, so we were able to grow together. And some of the people that participated in some of the rides went on to, like, one of them was a city councilor, and
yeah, that's fascinating.
And started to write policy for cycling, it sort of went hand in hand for a few of the things.
So right,
it wasn't, while it was primarily a bunch of rowdy cyclists going from one bar to the next and listening to music and enjoying beer specials.
Right,
you know, there were a few of them that would take it a step further and be part of the solution.
Yeah.
To bike infrastructure.
Like, people get inspired when they participate in something like this.
Right. Yeah. And that was one reason that I wanted to do it to begin with, like to teach people that you can ride your bike safely.
Right.
In the middle of the night.
Uh-huh.
You know? Like, any time you can get out there and be traffic.
Sure.
You know, and you don't have to, it doesn't have to be a critical mass, you know, while there are a lot of us, it's not what you would typically call a critical mass. We don't intentionally get in the way. We're not trying to...
You're not making a statement.
Disturb the traffic. We're not making a statement. We're just using our bicycle to go to the next destination, which is how most people use their car, you know?
Sure.
So that's all we wanted to do.
Yeah. So tell me about, what does it take to build an FBC in a town? Because this is something you built from the ground up, right? This is a thing that did not exist. You showed up and said there should be one.
Correct.
Yeah.
I pretty much started with a blog spot. Just started typing about it.
There we go.
Like, all right, guys, here's the thing. We're going to meet at X destination, and we're going to go to Y destination.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it on our bicycles. And I printed some spoke cards, and you should come get one from me.
There we go.
It took 5 months before somebody showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
So you were doing
these.
You were
just riding by yourself for five months.
Sometimes it was just me. Most times it was like me and my wife, and we would just go. There
That's
was a bar not too far
man.
From the house, and we would just call it an FBC. And it's like, all right, it's a full moon. Let's leave the house, which is our starting destination.
Yeah.
Right.
Because nobody's coming.
And
we'll go to another destination, you know.
Yeah.
So
does that mean, like, when the first person showed up for this ride 5 months down the road, and they show up at your house?
I actually did find a venue, which was pretty much across the street from our house.
Easy enough.
It was this dive, and 5 months in, I show up late. I tell everybody, it's like, okay, show up at 8, we'll ride at 9. And nobody was coming for the first 4 months. So, like, the fifth month rolled around.
So you're safe,
right?
It's
like, I'm not in a hurry to get there. Take your time getting ready.
I'll get there when I get there.
Right. So I get there, and there's, like, 6 bikes parked out front.
And you're like, holy shit.
Oh, my God, it's real. It's going to happen. So I go inside, and there's these very enthusiastic bike guys in there. Bike guys and girls standing around.
Really?
So a mixed gender from the start.
Yeah.
That's great.
The only problem I had at that point was I didn't have a destination.
I don't know where to take these people.
I don't know where to go.
They're fools to have showed up. What's the deal?
It's a mystery ride now.
So they were all up in my face going, hey, where are we going? And I don't have anywhere to go. I don't know where to go.
Yeah. Did you say that, or were you like kind of formulating a plan?
Well, it looked like there was one of them that sort of led the group.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Like who... He probably convinced the rest of them it was a good idea to go.
The ringleader.
So I kind of got his ear and was like, I don't really have a destination. He was like, well, perfect. There's a friend of mine's wedding reception at a bar down the street.
Are you
Let's
serious?
Go.
No shit. So you crashed a wedding reception by bike?
He made a call, and they were like, sure, let's do it.
Yeah.
So we crashed a wedding reception and helped them float a keg.
Yes.
That's incredible.
And we had, you know, cheese and crackers and
right
and wine and beer,
the whole deal.
Yeah, the whole deal from a wedding reception.
Yeah,
it was really nice.
So as momentum built, I was going to use the word critical mass, but like you already decried that, so I'm thinking of an idea of like just like a bunch of people.
When did it become like self-sustaining?
Thank you.
When I knew it was its own animal was when we had sort of leveled off at like maybe 75 to 80 as a low number.
Okay.
But when I knew it was like an amazing thing, I was contacted from a friend of mine now named Michael, who was part of the marketing department for NOG in Australia.
The lights people.
The lights people.
Ah, okay. KNOG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he sent me an email. It's like, hey, buddy, I'm touring the world with a photographer from Tokyo, and we're going to go to Germany, Tokyo, New York, London, and started naming off real cities.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, and we'd like to come through Spokane as well.
Wow.
Because you're doing what you're doing,
yeah,
and people
yeah,
are participating,
yeah,
and we see you doing it.
Yeah. Did we put down the what time period was this?
It was 7 years ago.
Okay. So 2007 and 2009 in that area?
Right.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah. We moved there in 2007.
Okay.
So I did that for 6 years. So through, you know, 13, and then we moved here.
There we go.
But yeah, it was really bizarre that he said, you know, we see what you're doing. We appreciate it. We would like to come participate and photograph.
Wow.
So, you know, the Spokane FBC ended up in the, I don't know, what was it, 2009, 2008 NOG catalog?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Along with Tokyo and Germany and London and things like that. So that was really exciting. And that was the biggest ride we had had to date. It had been, you know, 75 or 80 people. And in the winter, you know, 30, 40 people would show up tops. And for the NOG ride, it was over 200 people.
Yeah.
Which was just remarkable to me.
Right.
We went to a destination which... Well, of course, it won't hold 200 people, but there's a bar catty corner across the street that would hold some people. And then on the same side of the street as the original bar, there was a pizza place that would hold a few people. And across on the other corner, there was a gas station.
So you just kind of got room indoors for everyone that shows up, and they just kind of create
a
plaza.
So they packed out the original bar. They packed out the secondary bar.
Yeah.
They packed out the tertiary pizza place. Me and four other guys are brown bagging our beers in front of the gas station.
There you go.
I couldn't get into my own party.
Yeah. You're doing the Lord's work,
In the meantime, like, the people who are working at these various establishments are like, oh, shit, here we go. It's going to be a long-ass night.
Yeah, and at that point, I knew it was turning into something. So when you show up with 80 people, you could really ruin somebody's night.
Right.
So I would call ahead. That's when I started that's when I started to really organize it, where it would take, you know, the 2 or 3 weeks leading up to it to organize a destination, find out what was going on at the destination, see if they have room for a band or a DJ and have them come play. And as the years rolled on, I could just call them up and say, hey,
FPC's coming.
Hey, this is Jeff from FPC. Yeah. It's like, oh, hey, how's it going? When are you coming?
I was like, a
couple of Fridays from now, we'll be there.
Very soon.
So they would, you know, they would give us drink specials and, you know, they would know that we weren't there to, you know, set the place on fire. We were there to enjoy the facility.
Right. Well, I'm sure you found that a lot of communication really helps as far as getting people's expectations, like you say, not mobbing a night, not shutting down a bar because they can't serve everyone.
Yeah, you could show up with 30 people,
right?
And it would be fine. I wouldn't feel bad about not calling before, but anything over that, it's like, well,
it's a lot of people.
It's a Tuesday, and there's like one guy working,
right?
It's like you're going to ruin that guy's night,
and like three old dudes that are.
I don't
care
how much you tip, you're going to ruin that guy's night.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the three old customers that are sitting there on a Tuesday night trying to watch the Zags play, and you're going to ruin their game.
Probably not going to be happy with you either. So
no, you won't get to come back.
Yeah, yeah.
So you may come back, but they won't accept you.
They won't want you.
No.
Yeah.
So good politics goes a long ways then.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Eventually, you planned for your departure, right? Because you knew that you were going to be moving to Portland.
That's right.
You'd had this amazing legacy of leading this thing, and you said, there is a season for everything. Turn.
And, right.
And so you kind of you scripted a large wrap up, right?
Yeah, I did. I had had so many fortunate. I was so fortunate in having all these businesses donate things to me locally and with Nog and Chrome and stuff like that internationally. You know, they would donate all this stuff to us, and I would just give it away.
Right.
For stuff like the Fiasco Ween, we did a Halloween ride. Our big December ride was Festivus. And I would just, you know, all those spoke cards were numbered.
Oh, there we go.
I would just draw a number out of a hat and then, you know, give stuff away.
There you go.
So I decided to do that for the last one as well. And I started billing it probably 2 months early. You know, I started telling everybody, all right, it's going to be the last one.
Right.
So you weren't planning on like having the FPC exist beyond your presence in Spokane?
No, I had poured a lot of work into this, and you know, Spokane is a big city, but it's a small city in the same regard. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody knows everybody else, and you know, you can. You attach your name to something, and it's yours.
Right.
It's not like trying to have the FBC in like New York or something like that, where it's a big city, and you know you don't really know who's responsible for it. You just know that it happens once a month.
Right.
This was sort of my thing, and I had I was always nervous about the liability of the whole thing. What if somebody gets hurt? What if you know, what if we have an altercation with a bar?
Yeah, and you
traffic?
Never had any big incidents?
We had one that could have turned into something a lot worse than it did. But nothing ever happened with that.
Okay.
So I guess that was sort of my wake-up call. Because I sort of assumed, it's like, everybody can take care of themselves. It's not a big deal.
Sure.
They're all adults.
We're all friends here.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I don't need
no one's out to get anybody.
I don't need you to sign a waiver, so I'm not responsible for you breaking your collarbone on a speed bump because you're blackout drunk on your way home.
That's you as a responsible adult making that choice.
Right. Yeah. That's not my fault. I just invited, you know, just sent an open invitation the way I thought of it.
Sure.
So I feel like... if I left and left the name FBC still behind and the whole legacy of the whole thing, and if it was still sort of an open-ended thing without me there and something bad were to happen, it could still fall back on me. And that's just me being a worrier.
Well, sure.
In a you know, yeah, in that sort of
respect. It's good to have those bases covered, I guess. Yeah.
There's something to that. And yeah. I would say even, obviously, the liability concerns or, like, or reputation concerns mm-hmm. or something, but there's also simply if, say, like, you leave the band, you know, like, you you had a successful career, thousands of platinum
There's
albums.
There's only one John Entwistle.
That's it. Yeah, it's like
irreplaceable.
There are some bands that have had careers where they're more of a what would you call it? They're like a chain, you know. They're like a franchise more mm-hmm. than more
yeah,
than like a
where you
band
have
of
like
people.
Sort of a rotating roster.
Right. Yeah. And yeah. like well, the concept outlives any sort of thing. But it seems like what you created was so personal that it would almost seem like it wouldn't make sense for that to exist without you.
Well, true. And it was something that I did and I made it personal. I made it mine. I made it my very own. And if I were to leave that with somebody, they would still be doing my work. They wouldn't be doing it the way they wanted to do it. And then if they weren't happy with the way it was going, people wouldn't show up anymore.
Right.
You know, they're just expecting it. They would want to start doing it differently. And then if it was still called the FBC, people would show up expecting the FBC and it was done.
This is bullshit.
Somebody else's way.
This used to be so cool, but now it's all changed.
Yeah, they would call bullshit, and they would just leave, and they wouldn't come back. And it's kind of a disservice to the next person who wants to come along and start a bike club that just happens to be monthly and happens to be at night.
Right.
And happens to start at the same bar.
Exactly.
Which is what's going on now. There's a guy running a monthly, what's called the Swamp Ride now.
The Swamp Ride.
Yeah, because it starts at the same bar, which happened to be the Swamp. Props to the Swamp.
There we go.
Which happens to be a great establishment.
Excellent.
The middle of nowhere, so we didn't have to worry about traffic. And, you know, he's got a successful thing going on, and they do it completely different, but there's a lot of things that are similar.
And I'm sure a lot of overlap between the members of the FBC and the members of this new Swamp Ride.
Absolutely. I'm pretty sure I could just show up on the next full moon and see, you know, most of, if not all
of the
same people.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, do you think you could see yourself starting any sort of organization in Portland, or have you done what you wanted to do and it's Portland's like your place to retire, as it were?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is kind of my place to retire and just become a commuter, uh-huh. you know. And I don't know.
Well, I'm still participate, but
yeah.
As far as the energy to lead or the energy to like start something, just not
yeah,
there.
I really don't think I could dedicate the time that it takes to
sure.
do it. That's
right.
That's another reason that I stopped doing the FBC is because it was a. It was a second job
right.
that I didn't get paid for. In
Seriously.
Fact, it cost me to do this second job, you know?
Dude, you could start a podcast. you're also a father, so that takes a lot of time
that
as well.
That changes things.
Yeah, that's job number one right
yes.
there.
Yes. Well, I think you've landed in a good place, and it's really cool to hear the stories of what, you know, what you've come from and the legacy that you have left in Spokane. There was a fantastic documentary film, I think, that you had pointed us to at one point. And
that's
was,
right. My buddy Sean Finley did that.
Yeah. So we should put a link up to that.
Absolutely.
But Well, welcome to Portland, if we can be the... Can we be the official welcoming arms of Portland?
Well, we've done it a number of times already.
Let us throw our metaphoric arms around you and encircle you with the love of the podcast.
You know, you guys are pretty much like the welcoming party. It's like all of Team Sincerity were the first people that I really met.
Oh, holy shit. Yeah. And like Daniel,
Dan was the first guy who like gave a shit.
Right.
He was like, hey, we're stopped at a train. You're a dude.
How's it going?
Let's talk about stuff.
Which is awesome.
And then he got you into Midnight Mystery Rides, and that's how like we kind of connected. And
that's right.
Yeah, it's where I met you as well. So
that's the night you got home with no glasses.
I broke my glasses. I got home with a monocle, but I didn't realize it was a monocle until the next morning. So everything's a little fuzzy. Well, hey, we should probably do some headlines.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, Jeff, thank you for sharing your stories.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Are you ready to cover the headlines with us?
Sure.
We expect your commentary.
Absolutely. I'll do my best.
Here it comes.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike. It circles around the city like.
Sweet. All right. First up, from Anna in Portland, right here in Portland. The psychology of why cyclists enrage car drivers. This is off of a thing called Future, which is hosted by the BBC.
The British Broadcasting Corporation.
That is right, because that's where we have to go now to get unbiased news.
You know what I love? Yeah. BBC America. Like, that's a funny imprint.
British Broadcasting Company in America.
Yeah, yeah. But go ahead.
That's where I get my Doctor Who fix.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could argue that driving is so much of social life, or is like so much of social life. It's a game of coordination where we have to rely on each other to do the right thing. And like all games, there's an incentive to cheat. If everyone else is taking their turn, you can jump the queue. If everyone else is paying their taxes, you can dodge them, and you'll still get all the benefits of roads and police. Clarification. So this is an article on sort of the psychology or the viewpoint of drivers upon cyclists.
Yes.
So this is less of an opinion of cyclists. Does
okay.
that make sense?
Possibly. Is this a cartoon?
To clarify, well, no, to clarify the voicing of this narration here.
Yes.
In economics and evolution, this is known as the free rider problem. If you create a common benefit like taxes or orderly roads, what's to stop some people reaping the benefit without paying their dues? The free rider problem creates a paradox for those who study evolution because in a world of selfish genes, it appears to make cooperation unlikely. Even if a bunch of selfish individuals, or genes, recognize the benefit of coming together to cooperate with each other, once the collective good has been created, it is rational, in a sense, for everyone to start trying to freeload off the collective. This makes any cooperation prone to collapse. In small societies, you can rely on cooperating with your friends or kin, but as a society grows, the problem of free riding looms larger and larger.
Okay, so we see... drivers assume that we're not paying taxes as cyclists, and so they see us as freeloaders.
Freeloaders, and not even necessarily on a tax level, on a sort of etiquette level. You know, we're weaving, sometimes weaving through traffic.
Cutting up the right side.
Yeah, queuing
up. Jumping
the
queue.
Right, yeah.
It's a great phrase.
Yeah. Or, you know, rolling through a stop sign because... no one's there. Or we know, like, okay, I can turn right here because these guys are waiting, you know, to go straight or turn left.
Sure.
Anyways, drivers see that as like a cheat in a way.
Right. By the way, jumping the queue on the right in Portland, totally legal.
Totally legal. Yes.
As long as there's room.
Yes. Watch out for doors and right hooks.
Yeah. Physics will stop you from breaking that law.
But yeah, it's a really interesting piece on the psychology of why, even if you are a cyclist and you're driving, you still kind of hate cyclists.
It's interesting because I'm in that position sometimes, and sometimes I'm like, what a dick. And then I'm like, wait, that's what I would do.
I would have done the same thing.
Right. Yeah. And so you kind of have to ask yourself this question, is that really a dick move or is that an acceptable sort of thing? It gets kind of complicated.
Yeah.
So worth a read.
Worth a read.
Okay.
We'll post the link to that.
Yeah.
From Bike Portland, Oregon Walks celebrates Vision Zero Plan and honors livable streets visionaries. After a significant grant victory that'll see the group partnering with biking advocates to advance street safety plans across the state, Oregon's largest walking advocacy group had plenty to celebrate Saturday. With your support, we are going to bring Vision Zero to Portland, Board President Aaron Brown told the crowd of about 200, formally announcing a $10,000 joint grant from Advocacy Advance to Oregon Walks and the Bicycle Transportation Alliance to build a road coalition demanding a Vision Zero approach to transportation planning, policy, and funding to all levels of Oregon government. The two local advocacy groups have made Vision Zero the principle that preventing death should be the first priority of transportation policy, big parts of their message in recent years. They were among three winners out of 78 applications for, quote, big idea grants of the National Advocacy Advance Program.
I do like the idea that no one should die on the roads.
I could get behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, obviously you can't prevent all deaths, but there's a lot of deaths out there that are preventable.
Right. And statistically, the probability could go down.
Yeah.
Oregon Walks is great. And actually, tomorrow night, I'll be recording with our listener, Brian, and Steph, who was formerly with Oregon Walks, is coming in to be co-host. So.
Yeah, I can't make that. So she's a perfect co-host.
She is. Yeah. She is.
Next up, I stole this from Clever Cycles website.
Yes.
This is more of an announcement, but I think for our listeners in Portland, this would be an interesting announcement here.
So I've heard it said that poetry doesn't pay.
Who says poetry doesn't pay?
I forgot
says,
who.
Says Clever Cycles. If you write a haiku on a theme of autumnal, wintry, Portland, bikey love, put it on social media of your choice, tagging us, Clever Cycles, and then come tell us about it. We will let you take a scratch card giving you 10 to 40% off of everything, capped at $1,000 off. Who says poetry doesn't pay? One per customer, in stock items only. Legalese follows.
Yeah. And no limericks.
Expires December 24th, yes. No limericks in all caps.
Okay. Good to know.
But yeah.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
Hey. Oh. And lastly, from Bike Portland again, the 10th annual Bike Craft is set for December 6th through 7th. And I know this isn't necessarily national news, but I'm bringing this up in the realm of simplicity because Bike Craft, well, let's read. The Bike Craft.
Tell me more.
The holiday gift fair for bike lovers is back. This will be the 10th time we've gotten together to highlight the best local bike-inspired makers and artisans. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
It does.
Can still remember that icy cold December night in 2005 when I invited a handful of creative folks to a coffee shop to share their wares. When we ended up with 20 vendors and a huge happy crowd, I knew we struck a nerve. This year, our friends Aaron Caffin and Amos Hunter once again keep this holiday tradition alive. They've announced that Bike Craft 2014 will be held at the Bike Farm on the weekend of December 6th through the 7th from 11 to 5 p.m. Aaron says they still have spaces available for vendors, so if you can make a cool bike product and are looking for a great place to debut, look no further. In keeping with the true spirit of Bike Craft, all sizes of businesses are welcome, from part-time crafters to established businesses. Tables and booths are $40 to $80. And check out bikecraftpdx.com for more info.
This is a really cool thing. And it's not on Black Friday, which is great.
Yeah. Well, it's traditionally was it not? It
might have been. I forget.
I thought last year it was.
Maybe closer to. Yeah.
Or at least on that weekend.
Right. I'm brand new to Bikecraft, so.
Yeah. It's a fun
little.
You guys
should probably drag me down there.
Fun little affair.
I will do my best to get you there. All right, and it's at the Bike Farm this year.
Bike Farm is a wonderful location.
Yeah. Nice big open space there.
So yeah.
I'm excited. I'm hoping there's going to be just tons of vendors and fun stuff.
Yeah. You know, I've thought about it. I'm too late on my game for it this year, but I thought about setting up a podcasting booth at Bike Craft.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just podcast yourself.
Just stick a microphone in people's faces. People like that, right?
We could maybe figure something out.
Whatever happened to those audio postcards?
You know, they're still in here. They're still in the mailbag, as it were. We'll be rolling those out, though.
Okay.
Definitely. Matter of fact, you know, I'll start with the next episode. We'll have one at the beginning of the next episode.
Oh, yeah. We should just do one per episode for a while.
I need a fire under my ass for so many things just to get it done. So there's... Thank
you.
Ask
me, you can start with these wires.
Fire lit. Hey, guess what else we got?
What else do we got?
Hey, we got mail.
Can I read the first one?
Please.
It's pretty fascinating. Johnny K sends us instructions for using a protractor to determine how steep that hill you're climbing is. it's the same thing that I used when I was a child doing model rocketry. You have a thing, a protractor.
I just set them on fire.
Shot
them in the air. I didn't know you were actually supposed to do stuff with those things.
I did mathematical science. Yeah, but he sent us directions for, if you don't know exactly how steep that hill is you're climbing and you're curious, you can find out. So that's pretty cool. Also, he sent a story about using your bike to hunt rabbits. And we've been on this, vegans and not vegans discussion for, three or four episodes now.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Keeps on going. There's just a story that if you're not into images of animals and various stages of preparation for consumption, Don't follow this link. Don't look at the story. No. The guy that wrote this says, I wrote this because I thought some people might be interested that you can eat city rabbit and that it is very easy to field dress and prepare a small game if you choose to go that route. Thank you for reading, and thank you, Rabbit.
Thank you, Rabbit.
Yeah, he also says, didn't mean to be shocking or disrespectful to the animal. I love animals. I felt sadness when the bunny died in my hands. So eating this animal was the way I chose to respect its life. It's a very interesting thing. I have never eaten rabbit, so I don't know if I would do that or not. I certainly
have a vague recollection of having grilled rabbit.
Oh, really?
When I was like, I don't know, 10 or something around there.
Did it taste like chicken?
It tastes like really dry chicken.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. Field dressing does seem like a thing, yeah. So, anyways, that's Johnny K's piece of mail.
Oh, yeah.
You want to take the next one?
Yeah, Anna sent us a link to Cycling Without Age.
Which looks fascinating.
That was off of Copenhagenize. I can't pronounce or remember the name of that site now.
It's taking seniors in rickshaws taking them places, right?
Yeah, it was with the caption of, why does Portland not have this yet?
Yeah, no kidding.
But, you know, there's more aging people around than there used to be, and there's only going to be even more as time goes on and as we're living longer. I think this is becoming, or this should anyways, become more of a trend. It is something that sort of answers a hanging question I have of, like, what am I going to do if I ever am old enough or somehow unable to ride a bike?
You got to find a young bike punk to ferry you around.
And I would love that.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Definitely. You read this, you said?
Yeah.
It sounds
really neat.
Would you volunteer to cycle someone around?
I wouldn't volunteer, but I'd get paid for it.
It's a good distinction.
I would gladly accept money to do
that. Yes.
I would volunteer until they start paying me. Like, it's one of those things where, you just keep showing up, and then eventually, I guess we got to put you on the books now.
Yeah. I got a job at a bookstore the same way.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Ben sends us a record-playing bicycle, and this is, I suppose it's kind of a stunt, but it actually plays the records. So, it's cool. There are some pictures. Check it out.
Chris in Arcata sends us a video about a bike trip full of left turns.
Like metaphoric ones.
Oh. They run out of cash with no ATM in the middle of Mexico. Find out how authorities treated them in this case. They had no money to do the whale boat ride. Find out how they got the money to kiss the gentle whales. Who goes a little crazy in the middle of the film shoot?
Yeah, and I said it reminds me of Tom Allen's philosophy on touring. It's just like you go out and you do things whether you have money or not.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Which he's been sort of on this kick of doing things basically like going out for free and just trading work for lodging. And
I should put another link up to that because that's pretty fascinating. Phil in Alaska on why he's not vegan but appreciates our considerations on clothing. Really, he says, is the alternative to wool morally better? Most of us have a wealth of poly clothing in our closets. Polyester, it's made of oil.
Oil, I tell you.
I'd rather distress a poor defenseless sheep a little than continue to pull oil out of the ground to make moisture-wicking clothing. From a global perspective, purchasing pre-worn wool, leather, silk, and poly clothing is certainly the way to go. The resource has already been extracted, and by selecting used means a slightly smaller demand. However, if buying new, it seems the wiser and more moralistic approach to go with an animal-based product over an oil-based product. The politics of fabric. Wild, man, he says. Wild. Is it strange that we think so deeply about these things? No, it's not. I think everyone should very deeply consider the things that make up the life that they have and whether they like them or not.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Word.
Unless we get to a point to where we can no longer, it's no longer a priority to think so deeply about these things.
Right.
Say society collapses. And, you know, you just have to wear Polar Bear.
Right, exactly, yeah. And shout at Carl to get back in the house.
Carl!
Exactly.
Lastly, the Stickman says, so Phoenix gets bike share going ahead of Portland? Strange world. Starts November 25th. Care of gridbikes.com.
Yeah, that's surprising. But I will say two good things. Number one, there are people riding bikes in Phoenix, which is awesome.
Which is, yeah.
I wouldn't have expected it.
That's surprising enough as it is.
It's goddamn hot down there. And then also,
it doesn't surprise me that somebody else's bike share got started before one in Portland.
Oh, sure. Like,
I mean, everybody here already has a bike.
You know,
that's one.
And I are probably going to say about the same thing. You go.
That's one of the things that I think has kept bike share from happening.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, there's a proliferation of bicycles and people with them. To the point where, yeah, even, I mean, private rental shops, there are so many of those that it's fairly easy to get a bicycle, even as a stranger in town, that, yeah, maybe that's one of the difficulties, but, yeah.
That reminds me, speaking of bike rentals.
Tell me.
I got to go to Michigan this week.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Are you renting a bike?
I'm taking a Brompton with me.
That seems like a good idea.
Yeah. Hopefully it's going to, like, the roads will be nice enough. You know,
you're gonna have to
otherwise I've just got a really, really heavy piece of luggage. Yeah.
Exercise equipment.
Yeah.
At least that's what you tell the people at the
counter. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm going by like it fits the dimensions of the overhead compartments and there's nothing.
Does it really?
Yeah. There's nothing in this particular airline's policies that states like you can't have this in the overhead. Like as far as carry-on, it says just any carry-on has to fit in these dimensions.
Yeah. Well, at the worst, they just gate check it.
Right.
But, I mean, you should just be able to carry it on the plane.
Yeah.
Seems like a good idea.
That is my goal.
Or it might turn out like one of those Border Patrol checkpoint refusal videos that I've been watching recently.
Is this a new hobby of yours?
You're into those now?
Am I free to go? So anyways, yeah. And then Glenn in Edmonton did coffee outside in the middle of a video about it. So
yeah.
We'll link to that.
I hope it becomes a thing over there.
I think it's already a thing. He took a video of it. It's there.
It's now a thing.
Yeah. Just has to happen again and again. It's kind of like the FBC, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
The YEG BC.
Yeah.
What people?
Yeah, buddy.
You with me?
I think, yes, I am with you. I think this seems like a good idea. Yeah. Well, hey, you know what?
Hey.
We got some time.
Oh, shit.
You could do your own thing. If you live somewhere where people are not getting together and riding bikes and having fun in any configuration, any time of day, drinking coffee, drinking beer, legally, illegally, kids, seniors, go out. Make it happen. I think that seems like, yeah, that's your call to action, people. Go do it.
That's nice.
All right. That's a good place to end the show, right?
I think so.
All right. Let's close her out.
Am I free to go?
You still got another 10 minutes with us.
Zing. I'd like you to pull it at the secondary inspection area.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback via email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call or text 2503-847-9774. Twitter to The Sprocket or at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. Thanks to Herbert for our headline sounder. Thanks to Marcus Norman for graphic design. And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K. Shadowfoot, Katharina Mellengard,
Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie,
Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lean,
Richard Wazensky, Tim Mooney, Orange and Purple,
Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden,
Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller, Todd Parker,
Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt, and Zoe Campagna.
Bye bye, everybody.
We did it.
Boom. The look on your face is priceless.
Oh.
Warm stub town.
This is not good. This is right here. This is a sign of an addict.
That you're
gonna drink it anyway.
You're gonna suck it down.
Yep. Oh, they weren't kidding. Keep refrigerated, indeed.
Oh, is there an actual warning on the bottle?
He just says.
Okay.
They mean it.
That wasn't a suggestion.
Keep refrigerated. Look, dumbass.
Look.
I said refrigerated.
You dumb son of a bitch.
Don't drink this swill. Warm.
This is making me look forward to the ginger beer.
Yeah. Well, you have to have something. That's like a reverse sort of.
That's my jam.
You're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.